Our scripture reading this morning is from Hebrews chapter 11, and going into chapter 12 as well. So we're going to start in Hebrews 11, verse 1. I don't know what page it is on your pew Bibles because I'm filling in, so sorry. Hebrews 11, verse 1. Now faith is the confidence in what we hope for and the assurance about what we do not see. This is what the ancients were commended for. By faith we understand that the universe was formed at God's command, so that what is seen was not made out of what was visible. By faith Abel brought God a better offering than Cain did. By faith, he was commended as righteous when God spoke well of his offerings. And by faith, Abel still speaks even though he is dead. By faith, Enoch was taken from this life so that he did not experience death. He could not be found because God had taken him away. For before he was taken, he was commended as one who pleased God. And without faith, it is impossible to please God. Because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. By faith, Noah, when warned about things not yet seen, in holy fear built an ark to save his family. By his faith, he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness that is in keeping with faith. By faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going. By faith, he made his home in the promised land, like a stranger in a foreign country. He lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city with foundations, whose architect and builder is God. And by faith, even Sarah, who was past childbearing age, was enabled to bear children, because she considered him faithful, who had made the promise. And so from this one man, and he as good as dead, came descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as countless as the sand on the seashore. All these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them at a distance, admitting that they were foreigners and strangers on earth. People who say such things show that they are looking for a country of their own. If they had been thinking of the country they had left, they would have had opportunity to return. Instead, they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. By faith, Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had embraced the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son, even though God had said to him, "It is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned." Abraham reasoned that God could even raise the dead, and so in a manner of speaking, he did receive Isaac back from death. By faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau in regard to their future. By faith, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of Joseph's sons and worshipped as he leaned on the top of his staff. By faith, Joseph, when his end was near, spoke about the exodus of the Israelites from Egypt and gave instructions concerning the burial of his bones. By faith, Moses' parents hid him for about 3 months after he was born because they saw he was no ordinary child and they were not afraid of the king's edict. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to be mistreated along with the people of God rather than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt, because he was looking ahead to his reward. By faith, he left Egypt, not fearing the king's anger. He persevered because he saw him who is invisible. By faith, he kept the Passover and the application of blood so that the destroyer of the firstborn would not touch the firstborn of Israel. By faith, the people passed through the Red Sea as on dry land. But when the Egyptians tried to do so, they were drowned. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell after the army had marched around them for 7 days. By faith, the prostitute Rahab, because she welcomed the spies, was not killed with those who were disobedient. And what more shall I say? I do not have time to tell about Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, about David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, and gained what was promised, who shut the mouths of lions, quenched the fury of the flames, and escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned into strength, and who became powerful in battle and routed foreign armies. Women received back their dead, raised to life again. There were others who were tortured, refusing to be released so that they might gain an even better resurrection. Some faced jeers and flogging, and even chains and imprisonment. They were put to death by stoning. They were sawed in two. They were killed by the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, persecuted, and mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and mountains, living in caves and in holes in the ground. These were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised, since God had planned something better for us so that only together with us would they be made perfect. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Thank you, Pastor Steve, for reading that for us. When I was a youth, in my teen years and into my young adult years, I liked to go on canoe trips. And we'd go on some canoe trips, did a few when we were with our kids as well. And one of the things about a canoe trip, if you've ever gone on a canoe trip before, is a canoe trip is not the same as camping, car camping, okay? With car camping, you got your car and you got all your stuff. You can load it up as much as you want. You know, it's not the same as being in an RV or going to a cottage or going to a resort. It sounds similar because you're on vacation, but when you go canoe camping, what you have is your canoe, 18 to 20 feet, your partner, maybe your dog and your kids and all of your stuff, depending on who you're going with, and you put it in the lake, and that's what you've got for however long you're going. And as you're on your canoe trip, usually the goal or what you're doing is you put your canoe in, you paddle across a lake until you get to the end or some part on the lake where you are then going to portage. If you don't know what that is, that's when you start having regrets about all the stuff you put into your canoe just a short while before, because now you have to carry everything over land to get to the next place. And you keep doing this over and over again for as many days as you decided to go out and enjoy your vacation. And so this is a canoe trip. Now, one of the things about a canoe trip, when you first get in the water, though, is all you have, oftentimes you've marked out a course of where you want to go, usually a circular route unless you've left the car somewhere, but you've marked out a course and this direction and this path that you want to go. And you have your map, hopefully a topographical map, but when you have a map, you can see a whole bunch, but when you're on the lake, all you can usually see is just what's right in front of you. And the perspective, you know, there might be trees far off in the distance and then an island and, you know, maybe another place where it turns. And you can't always see what's there. You just see what's right in front of you. And so in order to get to the destination that you're trying to get to on your canoe trip so you can actually finish your route, oftentimes as you start to paddle, you have to pick a spot. And as you're picking that spot, that's where you're going to paddle to. You fix your eyes on that. That might not be the spot where you're actually getting out in that lake, but you probably can't see the spot because oftentimes these lakes are pretty big and there's different paths and nooks and crannies and you know, rivers and things like that. And so you fix your eyes on something and you paddle until you get to that spot. And then as you get a new course, you fix your eyes and you go down a new spot until you find that little place in this big lake where you're going to take your canoe out and go to the next place. That is what canoeing and portaging and canoe trips are all about. But one of the things I love about canoe trips
is this. At the end of the day, when you're all done, you get to sit on a nice piece of rock overlooking a lake. It's summertime, so it's like 8 o'clock at night. And you get to eat the best pasta you have ever had, okay? And now, it's not actually the best pasta you've ever had, but it tastes like that. And here's the reason why. Because you have survived the day. You have gone through that day. You have worked hard. You have been strenuous. And now you get to rest. And you get to sit there and look out and go, I made it. And you know, the book of Hebrews, and as we go through this passage today in Hebrews chapter 11, which is often talked about as, you know, the hall of fame or this great cloud of witnesses of people who have gone before us. Pastor Steve looked at the first half of this passage last week, and I'm going to carry it on. This hall of fame of people of faith who have gone before us are people who are sitting there at the end of this journey. They're eating, they're enjoying, and they are resting because they have finished the race. They have finished it well, and they made it, and they're there enjoying all the benefits of being faithful. And so as we look at this passage today, our big point, if you're filling it out in these things, our little sermon notes there, is it's similar to last week's. The big idea is when your faith in God is faltering, fix your eyes on Jesus and take courage from the faithful examples that have gone before you as you persevere each day. When you're on a canoe trip, you've marked a course and you've got to keep going, but the reality is you don't know what you're going to encounter. You don't know what the mosquitoes are going to be like, or the black flies are going to be like, or how much rain there was, and how deep, as you're going through carrying your canoe, the mud puddles are going to be. And so you just have to keep going. And so as we look at this passage, as we start 2025, my prayer for you, and hopefully as we read these words together and are encouraged by them and spurred on by them, is this, that we would finish and persevere well this year, that we would persevere well today, tomorrow, the next day, and all of 2025. And so the reality is, though, that at times our faith, like our big idea says, our faith in God at times, our faith sometimes will falter, okay? Now, falter doesn't mean fail, okay? Faltering is a little bit wobbly. If you've ever seen a kid start to learn to ride a bike, okay, you go, and you go, ooh, because they started to look too close instead of far away, and they're faltering. They're not done. And the reality is, in our lives, we experience this faltering of faith. It may be for a short period of time. It may be for a long season of time. There is hardships. There is persecution. There is suffering. There is unanswered promises that we think are unanswered. And so what we need to do in the midst of our faltering, in the midst of being able to be faithful and persevering today and throughout all of 2025 is fixing our eyes on Jesus. And we need to take courage from faithful examples in Scripture within our congregation who have gone before us and who have persevered. Because they are showing us as we fix our eyes on Jesus that Jesus is faithful. And so if you remember the book of Hebrews, we've said this many times, is written to a group of Hebrew Christians who are following Jesus, and they're considering turning back to their own ways, their old ways, okay? Their faith is faltering. They're like, oh man, we used to follow Judaism and all these ways, and now we turn to Jesus, but we're thinking, maybe that's not it. And so the book of Hebrews, we've said, is really a long sermon trying to convince them, spur them on, and remind them why Jesus is enough. And this passage, I could probably just preach on verses 12, 1, and 2, and you would get enough in there, because it just reminds us in there that everything, and in this passage, that Jesus is the beginning and the end of everything, of all your faith journey. Jesus is the beginning and the end. So he's even saying to them, look, if you go back to your ways of Judaism, you really are just starting back at the beginning, because eventually you're still waiting for a Messiah. We are proclaiming that Jesus has come. This is the fulfillment of all the promises that you've been looking for. And so that's the book of Hebrews as we continue on. And there is this spurring on of these Hebrew Christians to carry on, to don't look back, but fix your eyes on Jesus, the perfecter of this faith that you have. So as we're going through here, the first couple of verses that we're going through, verses 17 to 22, our main point is this. Living by faith requires us to embrace God's promises and anticipate their future fulfillment. So verses 17, and it says this in verse 17. By faith, Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had embraced the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son, even though God had said to him, "It is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned." Abraham reasoned that God could even raise the dead, and so in a manner of speaking, he did receive Isaac back from the dead. One of the things you'll see repeated throughout this whole passage is by faith, okay? Verse 17, beginning of 17, 20, 21, 22, all the way through. It's by faith. We are living these things out by faith. So by faith, Abraham, Pastor Steve started talking about Abraham last week. We know Abraham is one of the patriarchs. And as we look at verses 17 to 22, what we're going to see is that all of these patriarchs, all of these faithful people, this didn't happen in a short period of time. This wasn't like, hey, here's a week, here's the promise fulfillment. We're talking hundreds of years, right? Hundreds of years. And so, because that's what it says here. It says, he embraced the promises of God. This is what we're required to do. You know, how are we supposed to know what we're hoping for if we don't know what God has promised for us? So he embraced these promises. The promise that he embraced was the covenants that we have talked about before, that he would be given a land, that he would be made into a great nation, and that he would be blessed, and that God would be their God, and they would be his people, and that God would be their God. I think I probably got that somewhere in there. But these are the promises that he was looking forward to. How do you have a land when you don't even have any children? But Abraham had embraced this promise that it would happen. And we've heard this story before of Abraham going up on the mountain to offer Isaac as a sacrifice. And here's what happens in that. It says, "It is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned. Abraham reasoned that God could even raise the dead, and so a manner of speaking, he did receive Isaac back from the dead." Abraham had embraced the promises of God, and he knew that they were going to be fulfilled in the future. He even somehow realized in faith that God is going to fulfill his promise, so he's not going to ask me to do something that goes against fulfilling his promise, which is a word to us as well. God is not going to ask us to do something that goes against what his promises already are for us, or what his words and commands have already been given to us. That's one of the ways we can differentiate. Is this how God is directing us? And so he embraced that, and he listened. And we know the great story there that God provided a ram, which was obviously this incredible foreshadowing and this shadow of what was to come in Abraham being willing to offer his son Isaac. What we know is this is just a shadow, remember, of Jesus, who when he actually came, God offered Jesus as his one and only son, as a sacrifice to take away the sins of the world, right? All of these examples, as the writer of Hebrews is writing to people to encourage them in their faith when their faith is faltering, he is reminding them that all of the stories, all of the patriarchs, all of the Old Testament, they're not just stories. And this is what we need to remember too as Christians today, that we don't just have the New Testament and the Old Testament, and so we don't need to focus on the Old Testament. We've just got the New now, right? But the Old Testament is so rich in the shadows and the stories and the foretelling of God's promises and the future fulfillment of those promises that when we read this, we're just amazed at how it looks forward to one day being fully fulfilled in Christ. And then it makes you go, wow, that is incredible. And so The writer of Hebrews is spurring these people on in this way to say, look, Jesus has come and fulfilled this. This was just a shadow, this picture of what was going on. And so, that's what we see here. And the next couple, I'm not going to go into all of these in great detail because we don't have that much time today. But as Abraham obeyed and did this, what he was realizing is that there was this promise and it was going to happen in the future. Now that was passed on, as it says in verse 20, by faith Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau in regard to their future. Even Isaac didn't get to fully see all of the blessing and all of the promises that his father Abraham had embraced. It wasn't there yet. It wasn't fully fulfilled. Yet Isaac passed it on to the future, to the future, and blessed Jacob and Esau. Verse 21, by faith, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of Joseph's sons and worshiped as he leaned on top of his staff. Again, this future anticipation, instead of just becoming dissatisfied, instead of just saying, God hasn't showed up yet, obviously he's not showing up, I'm out of here. Living by faith requires us to embrace God's promises and anticipate their future fulfillment. See, we live in an instant society. You and I know this. We've got to the instant part that even all of our TV now, we don't just want to watch a show and wait a week like you used to and have to see commercials. We want to see an entire season right away, and as soon as we've binge-watched an entire season, we Google, when is season 2 coming out? Who's done that? Okay, you don't have to admit it. When's season 3? Oh yeah, thank you. We do that all, we live always in this quick, immediate fulfillment of things. But that's not God's timing. And we need to get on God's timing. The beauty of Hebrews 11 is that over the course of this whole chapter, you see the future promise being passed on. And it's going to come to the conclusion here where it says that none of them saw the fulfillment of these things in their lifetime. And that's true in part, but what we get to see and what they could see is as it was passed on from generation to generation, from their sons to the next person, they could look back and see God's faithfulness, that he was fulfilling it, that he was sustaining them, not in its fullness, and so they continued to look forward to the future. The same with you and me. Jesus is working on us. When our faith is faltering, when we think things aren't going well, Jesus is still in control. He is still there. And there is this future fulfillment. One day, we're going to get there in this passage. You're going to be up there because all of these people of faith are cheering you and me on. More than that, Jesus has already completed this. He's sitting in heaven at the right hand of God, cheering us on, interceding on our behalf so that we will finish this well. That's what Scripture tells us. And more than that, he's given us the Holy Spirit to make sure that when our faith is faltering, we can carry on. And so there is this future fulfillment as it carries on here. Verse 22, by faith, Joseph, when his end was near, spoke about the exodus of the Israelites from Egypt. Now, Joseph, at this time, they were still enslaved, yet he speaks of this exodus from Egypt. And he passes this on because he still believes in the promises of God and that God is going to fulfill these things. And they were looking forward to somebody who was going to come and be this person that sets them free. And so, and he gave instructions concerning his burial that one day, sure, you can bury me here, but when we get to the promised land, I want you to come back, get my bones, and bring me back, okay? And so this is how sure he was, and this is how we are to live. The requires, carry on in verses 23 to 31, is living by faith requires obedience to God's ways and courage in the face of opposition, trusting that God keeps his promises. As it carries on here in verse 23, it says, by faith, Moses' parents hid him for 3 months after he was born, because they saw that he was no ordinary child, and they were not afraid of the king's edicts. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to be mistreated along with the people of God rather than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He regarded he was looking for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasure of Egypt, because he was looking ahead to his reward. By faith, he left Egypt, not fearing the king's anger. He persevered because he saw him who is invisible. Now, this passage here, as we look at this, requires obedience. Our faith requires obedience to God's ways and courage in the face of opposition, trusting that God will keep his promises. What we see here is that Moses' parents, they didn't decide to go with the edict of every child, every male born should be thrown into the Nile and killed. By faith, because they saw that he was no ordinary child. We don't know exactly, as you go back and read in Genesis, how they came to that determination, but there was something special. Something was communicated to them that they knew that they needed to preserve Moses. And so they did. And it says in there, and they were not afraid of the king's edict. The king's edict was, you need to kill the firstborns. You need to, or all the males. They all need to go into the Nile. Now, the king is the king. You don't listen to that, you're going into the Nile, okay? So, what's your choice, right? This is things to be afraid of. I don't know what's on your list of fear in following God's promises and what he's called you to do, but this is like a real thing, right? Like, this is a terrible, fearful situation. Yet they didn't obey the king. Instead, they were obedient to God and his promises and his ways. And so it says, as Moses grew up, he grew up, as you'll know, in the palace of the Pharaoh, so he had all of the best things. He could have enjoyed all of that. Yet he chose not to be known as them, not to live in luxury treasures of sin. Instead, he chose to be associated and put together with his people, the Israelites, the slaves. He went from being in the king's palace to being associated with the slaves. Now, why is this story in here? Because it's reminding us, it actually says in the next verse, that Moses, he regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ. You might be going, wait, Moses never talked about Jesus when he was going through. No, he didn't. But again, the Old Testament all points forward to Jesus, that he fulfills all of these things, that they were all set up to show us who Jesus was, how he suffered, how he lived, how he died. Jesus is the beginner, the starter, the pioneer, and the finisher of our faith. It finds its completion in Jesus. And so the author of Hebrews, though Moses wasn't thinking about Jesus, he was thinking about suffering and experiencing disgrace and saying no to the pleasures of sin out of faithfulness to God. And so he experienced that, and he shows us that it is okay, that it is better, that it is obedience, faithful obedience, to look at the world and go, I am going to say no to the fleeting pleasures of sin that are available to me, that are available to us, and I'm going to be counted as one of God's children, as one of his household. And that might mean that I'm a slave. That might mean that my life looks worse than the fleeting pleasure of sin. And, you know, the pleasure of sin is that sin is pleasurable momentarily, right? Sin is pleasurable. That's how it goes oftentimes, but it's momentary. What all of these people of faith are sharing about as they're sitting in heaven, as we see later, as there's this great cloud of witnesses, as they've successfully lived the life of faith, they're going, it was worth it. Be obedient, because it's not fleeting. It's an eternal home. Hebrews, if you'll remember, a theme that continued time and time again throughout Hebrews is helping the Hebrew Christians to not look at the immediate, but to look to the future. And that's the same thing for us, right? I get so focused sometimes on what's right in front of me in this day and in this age, and I can get grumpy about the smallest things, and I can lose sight of the faith and the promises that God has given me, and I need to lift up my eyes and fix my eyes on Jesus to get through, to be obedient, to be courageous. And so that's what we see here. As it continues on, I love the verse in 27, it says, by faith he left Egypt, Again, not fearing the king's anger. And so there is this amount of courage that we need in following Jesus. We look to our king, not other kings, not other people. We look to our king, and he will sustain us. He persevered. We're going to see that as a theme as well. He persevered because he saw him who is invisible. That kind of goes back, if you remember, to the beginning of Hebrews chapter 11. It says in the first verse, Hebrews chapter 11, now faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. Now, faith is having confidence, as Pastor Steve was reminding us last week. It's confidence in something, though, something that has substance. It's confidence in Jesus and in his promises. It's not just, hey, pie in the sky, hope about something. I think he used the example that the Toronto Maple Leafs are going to win the Stanley Cup this year, and I agree that they are. We beat Boston last night, so in the playoffs we'll beat them again. But this is hope that has substance. It's hope in the promises of God, but what it says here is it's hope in what is not seen. And Moses did that. And so my question to you is, do you have this confidence? Are you going to continue to persevere even though you don't see him who is invisible? I know Jesus never shows up right beside you. He doesn't. Not in the physical form. He did to 500 people after his resurrection. He lived on this earth. He was a real man. Fully God, fully human. We don't see God. We don't see his spirit. We see his workings of it. We see it throughout all of history. But we need to persevere. God has made himself known. We need to be convinced of this. As it keeps going on here, verse 28 tells that Moses, by faith, kept the Passover and the application of blood so that the destroyer of the firstborn would not touch the firstborn of Israel. Just this reminder that Moses continued to keep and kept the Passover meal, trusting in the blood of an animal that was shed that then saved all of the firstborn of Israel. The destroyer came and killed off all of the other firstborn throughout the whole land. Like, just this faith in trusting what was unseen. As it continues on, we won't go into all the stories, but it says, by faith, those people, after Pharaoh let them go, they crossed the Red Sea on dry land. The Egyptians tried it after the army marched around them for 7 days. Incredible story, right? This is all leading into part of the promise that Abraham was received, that you're going to have a land. You're going to have this land. You're going to be a great nation. And so as they're, obviously, to be a great nation, you can't be in slavery, enslaved in Egypt. And so they had to get out of there. And all of these next verses of crossing the Red Sea, taking over Jericho, Rahab, it says in verse 31, by faith the prostitute Rahab, because she welcomed the spies, was not killed while they were disobedient. Rahab lived in Jericho. Spies were sent. She welcomed them in. She hid them, sent them off safely. And then that intel that they got later on was when they marched around the walls of Jericho. They knew what was going on. And what they found out, those two spies, as you read this story, as they're seeing God's promises fulfilled, is that Rahab had heard about the Lord. They had heard these rumors that the Israelites are taking over these armies, that their God is real, and that fear had went through that whole city. And so Rahab, she believed God. She didn't do this out of fear. She didn't do this out of, oh, I know how to protect my family. She acknowledged in faith that Yahweh, the one true God, the God of Israel, was the true God, and I am going to side with them. Even though in the face right now, she is receiving opposition. She easily could have been killed. But there she is, trusting and aligning herself with Yahweh, with the Lord. And so what we see in this, the next whole kind of passage there, in that passage is that that we just read from verses 22 to 31 is that we have to have this obedience. Living by faith requires us to have obedience and courage. As it carries on, the next main point for verses 32 all the way down to 40 is, you know, they summarize it, what more shall we say? We don't have time to tell you about Gideon and all of these other people, and neither do I today. But all of these people, what we see is that your faith in this world will involve suffering. Now, don't listen to this list and go, all right, so I'm going to make it through the flames. I'm going to be sawed in two. I'm going to face jeers and flogging. You don't get all of this, okay? This has been spread out for lots of people. But the reality is this. You will suffer in some way. Your faith in this world will involve suffering of various kinds. But we have been promised a heavenly home where Jesus is already. This is the promise. Your life and your faith in following Jesus will involve suffering of various kinds. Prepare for it in 2025. And when your faith is faltering and you are experiencing suffering, don't say God is not faithful. Because we've heard that most of his promises, there's this future fulfillment, that God is there. His timing is not our timing. It requires us to be courageous. It requires us to have obedience. And so as we go, we will experience suffering of various kinds. But here's what we know. But we've been promised a heavenly home. And there's not just a promise of it. Jesus is already there. Jesus is already there. That's what this passage reminds us. The very last verse on here, it says, for the joy set before him endured the cross. Chapter 12, verse 2. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Jesus is already there. We are going to experience suffering. And it goes through, and maybe you're like me. I don't know if you've read that whole passage before, and you kind of read through, and you're like, yeah, I know Gideon, Barak, Samson, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David. Like, all of these people, if you look through their life, as with most Old Testament people, they didn't live perfect lives, right? At all. If you go through, there were some who were very sexually promiscuous. There were others who were involved in adultery, breaking God's covenant promises. There was others who tried to murder people. But what we see here is that it says that all of them, through faith, they did this. They were commended for their faith. And we might go, all of those people were commended for their faith? Do you know how they lived? They did a lot. They were commended for their faith in God, that he is faithful to their promises, that he stayed the course with them. They're not being honored in this hall of fame because they live perfect lives. They're being honored because they put their hope and trust and faith in the one who is perfect, the one who perfected them, the one who took away their sins. That's what they were all hoping for, these future promises, a future Messiah, that they stayed the course. And that's the hope for you and me. None of us here have lived a perfect life or will live a perfect life even after salvation. Our hope is in the fact that we will continue to persevere because Jesus, through his work on the cross, has brought about our salvation. That is our hope. That is what we talk about. Not me being good, not you being good, but Jesus who is good, and we follow him, that we rest in his promises, in his price paid on the cross. If you've read those passages, I was saying, you might have read through half of that and thought, okay, those are the Old Testament people, and then you get to like verse 35, and it's like women received back their dead, raised to life again, others were tortured, refused to be released. And you might go, oh yeah, those are all the New Testament examples, because this is in the New Testament. But if you read that, those are all Old Testament examples. And so it sounds like things that we read about. We studied the book of Acts, you know, flogs and jeering and imprisonment, being sawed in two, all of these things. But this is all happening in the Old Testament. And it says, verse 38, the world was not worthy of them, which is okay, because at the beginning of Hebrews chapter 11, it reminded us that they're looking forward, Abraham was, and we are, to a city whose foundations and architect and builder is God. The world, it says, was not worthy of them. This is not our home, brothers and sisters in Christ, at Forward. In 2025, We might live here, but this isn't our home. And we need to continue to remember that and live in such a way and set goals in such a way and go through this life in such a way that this is not our home, to be courageous, to persevere. As we continue on, the next part of this, as we finish up, it gets into verses, I'll read verse 39. It says, "These were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised, since God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us would they be made perfect." So the writer of Hebrews is saying, look, all the Old Testament stories of Judaism, they all point forward to Jesus, but we need those. They fill out and they show Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter. They show the beginning. It says, since God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us would they be made perfect. All of the sacrifices, that whole system of sacrificing animals and all of those things, those all find their fulfillment in Jesus, who was the sacrifice once and for all. And it says, only together with us, with that process, would they be made perfect, would they be made complete. And so the last two verses that we're looking at today in chapter 12 talk about a race. They go into that example of, you know, running a race, finishing a race, being in the Colosseum, not the Colosseum, but being in, the winner's arena in the Olympic Games where there's this race going on. And the writer of Hebrews and in the New Testament, they oftentimes use this example of being in a race. I kind of talked about a canoe trip at the beginning, but a race is important. And so hear that example. And so in these last few verses as I talk, I want us to prepare to be race ready for 2025, to be race ready, to get and continue on faithfully for this whole year. And so as we look at this being race ready, the big idea, remember, is when your faith in God is faltering, fix your eyes on Jesus and take courage from the faithful examples that have gone before you as you persevere each day. So verse 12, or chapter 12, verse 1 and 2 says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, that's all that we've been talked about before this, all of these people of this ongoing promise passed from generation to generation. It says, we're surrounded by them. They're eating. They've finished the race. They didn't falter. They stayed faithful. They weren't perfect, but they put their hope in one who was. That's Jesus. We're surrounded by this great cloud of witnesses that is cheering us on. And it says, so here's what we need to be doing to get race ready for 2025. Let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. This is a call for us. This was a call for them. For the Hebrew Christians, hey, what's stopping you? What's tripping you up in wanting to go back? For you and me today, right now, what is stopping you? What's entangling you? What's causing your bike, if that use that example, to falter a little bit? Now, it says, it's pretty clear, it's for some of these things, throw off everything that hinders. Now, what hinders you might not be what hinders me. The next part there says sin, so get rid of sin. That's pretty standard. God has set what sin is. But there is this category before that of all of these things that hinder us. Sure, maybe it's good for somebody, but maybe it's not good for you. Maybe it leads to something else. Maybe you're involved in something too much, and you need to get rid of that. Whatever it is, to be race ready, to finish this race well, anything that's hindering you and the sin that so easily entangles you, get rid of it. When I'm on a canoe trip, every single time, actually even when I'm on a car camping trip, I always make notes, mental notes, write things down. What did I bring this time that I don't need to bring next time? And what did I forget this time that I need to bring next time? Now, I have to go back to that note to make sure I actually apply it to the next camping trip. But when you are on a canoe trip and you are carrying extra things, you go, I am not bringing that next time. We need to persevere. We need to finish the race that's been marked out for us. So what do we need to do? You and me, I literally need to follow this and throw off everything that hinders. We're not to take sin in our lives and allow it to become our pet and allow it to just be there and get used to it and be like, ah, I think I'm in control. Get rid of it, it says. And this is what it says. And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. And so number four there is finishing the race requires perseverance. Continuing to go. Continuing to run. Run and run and run. And this is what I'm going to say to you. You're not always going to run fast this year. At times, I'm going to say real slow. Because you're faltering. And you're wondering what's going on. And I'm going to say, persevere. As a church, as brothers and sisters in Christ, as people who are part of a small group, come alongside others. This cloud of witnesses is also us, encouraging others to persevere for the race marked out for us. Jesus has set a path, right? He is the path. That's why it comes up and it says this. Verse 2 is, fix our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. He set out a course. He's the course. Follow him. Fix your eyes on him. He is our destination all the time. He is always the answer. It's really easy to be a pastor. I just keep telling you, follow Jesus. Steve just keeps telling you, follow Jesus. Fix our eyes on Jesus. But it's not just, it's the gospel. It's the fulfillment of all of these promises for hundreds and hundreds and thousands of years that find their fulfillment in Jesus. Fix our eyes on him. He's the pioneer or the source or the author or the beginner and the perfecter of our faith, the finisher. And this is what we need to know, that Jesus has already finished the work. He is in heaven. He is there beside the right hand of the throne of God, cheering us on, interceding on our behalf. Living by faith requires us to fix our eyes on Jesus. But we, in today's day and age, in the New Testament, after Jesus, it says that Jesus is the fulfillment of these things that made perfect. We're not looking forward to the promise of Jesus bringing salvation for us, the forgiveness. We're looking back that he's already done that. He's done that. So embrace the promise and the fulfillment of that. Embrace Jesus who has accomplished it and keep your eyes on him, not thinking, what else am I supposed to do? And continue to persevere this year. It tells us that at the end part here, for the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and he sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Jesus was victorious. And so number six there is, Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, is cheering us on to faithful completion. You know, you read all of those things, and chapter 12, verse 1 says, since we're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. Let us run with perseverance the race marked out with us, out for us. And verse 2, fixing our eyes on Jesus, not fixing our eyes on all of these other people that went before us. They're there, and they were faithful, and they experienced, and they're examples for us, but we fix our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. And so, for each of you, as we go through this year, I am praying, we are praying, hopefully you are praying for one another, that all of us finish, that all of us persevere well, that in tomorrow, and the next day, and the next year, that we would persevere throughout this year. That even when our faith is faltering, we would fix our eyes on Jesus. That we would take courage from these examples that have gone before us and persevere each day. And if you have not even started this race, I would encourage you to consider that. Consider this race of trusting Jesus, that he is the one who has paid the price for your sins. And it will be a race, and there will be suffering. And there will be hardships, but there is an eternal kingdom. There is forgiveness of sins, and there is a place where he has prepared for you. That's what he's doing in heaven, interceding on our behalf. He has prepared a place for us where we will be forever and enjoy his presence. So this is our prayer, and this is what we're going to be aiming for as a church, is faithfulness and persevering each day as we look forward to Jesus and his return.